Progressive Radio News Hour with Stephen Ledman, Thursdays at 11 a.m. and weekends at 1 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Welcome to the Progressive Radio News Hour. I'm Steve Ledman. My guest today is Diane Wilson. Diane is a mother of five, and she's a longtime environmental, social justice, and peace activist, arrested over 50 times for her principled civil disobedience. She's also a co-founder of Code Pink, the Texas Jail Project, and Texas Injured Workers. She's also founder of the Calhoun County, Alabama, Resource Watch. And she's got a new book. Oh, Diana's a role model. She's a role model for the things I believe in, and I hope most people who listen to this program. Her book is titled Diary of an Eco-Outlaw, An Unreasonable Woman Breaks the Law for Mother Earth. We want to talk about the book. Diane, give me a moment. Let me just add a few comments at the beginning. Because we're really, maybe, I suspect in the early stages of what I hope is a remarkable time. We have uprisings all across the Middle East, from Morocco in the west, all the way over to Oman and Yemen in the east, straight across over a dozen countries. We have them in Europe. I've written about them in Greece. I've written about a bunch of them in the Middle East. We also have them in Greece. We have them in Spain, in Britain, a little bit in Britain. I think they're going to get a little bit more disruptive there before too long. They certainly were not kind to Obama when he visited the Queen at Buckingham Palace. There were lots of protesters outside, not too happy about him and what he and the British government are doing together, harming the British people and many others. We have this going on in a place called Georgia, and I'm not talking about the U.S. Georgia. I'm talking about the former Soviet Republic under a thug. Under a U.S.-installed, virtually a U.S.-installed thug, and the people have been protesting on the streets to get rid of this guy, and people are dying, and people are dying in a number of these countries fighting for their rights. In America, we had the most active in Wisconsin, public workers fighting for their rights. So where are the rest of Americans? Why aren't we on the streets fighting for our rights? This is what Diane does as an environmental activist, and regular listeners to this program know all the time I urge people to get active in our own self-interest, because if we don't do it, you can bet you it's never going to come from the people who run this government and their corrupted nexus with the powerful corporate interests, mainly the bankers, but big oil and big pharma and big defense and all the other ones working for their own self-interest against the common good. Oh, Diane, that was a long introduction. I welcome you. Oh, your book is a breath of fresh air. Welcome, well, Diane.
Thank you very much, and I love the introduction. You could have said that and a lot more.
Oh, absolutely. Talk about what you've done so much of, and then jump into the book and explain why you wrote it and what you wrote about.
Well, you know, I'm a real late bloomer on activism. I was, you know, I've been a fisherman my whole life. I've been a sea captain, and I had five kids, and I got one child who was autistic, and I was very busy with that, and I'm naturally a very quiet person. So people who always come up to me and say, "Hey, I'm just a quiet person and I'm really not the type to do that." I'm like, I don't have no track with that, because I was the worst of the worst on that, and it just shows you anybody can make a difference. And I started when I was 40, when shrimping was real bad, and I found out my tiny county on the Texas Gulf Coast had more pollution than any place in the United States, and we had half the waste generated in Texas. And you know, and all I did, I acted a little out of character, and all I did was pick up a phone and call a meeting about that, and I had such a backlash from people just not wanting me even to call a meeting that, you know, that's where it started, and it blew my mind. The whole thing blew my mind, and it was one of the best civic lessons I ever had.
Diane, I'm also, I've always been concerned about things going on, but I became an accidental writer and an even more accidental radio host past age 70.
Wow.
Past age 70. So
good,
I mean, if that's
good for you.
If that's the definition of a late bloomer, I think,
yeah,
I qualify. I mean,
yeah,
I was kind of a sub rosa bloomer. But
yeah, I've had people call me the Grandma Moses type of person.
Well, not in your 40s, Diane.
Yeah.
You're just a kid.
Yeah, well, I'm 60 now, and I've had a few lessons well learned.
Well, you are marvelous. I repeat this theme so often in this program, and regular listeners have heard it often enough. I hope they don't get tired of it, because it is so essential. I know enough about U.S. history also, Diane, to know that the only times major change ever came was from citizen activism. It's the way slavery was ended. Lincoln didn't end slavery. It was citizen activism that,
yeah,
that ended slavery. Lincoln wanted to save the Union. He didn't give a damn about the slaves.
Yeah.
My goodness. I mean, we had Washington, Jefferson, Madison. They didn't do anything. I mean, they talked big, but they didn't do an awful lot. Although I would trade the crowd we have today for any one of them.
Oh, yeah.
In a heartbeat. I mean, you just keep going. Franklin Roosevelt.
I totally agree with you on that. It's like it's people who misbehave who start these movements, and it's people, regular people that you never expect, and oftentimes they have no idea that they're going to become a part of, you know, a spark that ignites something. So that's why I always tell people is you never know what action you do is going to spark it, because a lot of people, they want it down pat. They want the plan. They want what's going to happen. They want to know all the ins and on all of this. When you're really stepping out, when you're really putting things at risk, a lot of those questions you don't know. You just do it because it's the right thing to do.
It sure is, and it's amazing. In my lifetime, there have been amazing things happen. I mean, major things. I mean, organized labor got rights for raising a ruckus. And one thing I want to stress, Diane, is that civil disobedience is an American tradition.
Isn't it so?
It is an American tradition. You know, I'm not talking about burning buildings down, but stuff like that happens,
uh-huh,
too. People get very angry when government is doing things that harm them. And we literally today, I think more than ever, have a corrupted government corporate nexus, not just in Washington, but at the state level, at the city level.
Yeah.
In my city of Chicago, Diane, we elected a war criminal as our new mayor. A war criminal.
I mean, this guy
should be in prison. He shouldn't,
yeah,
be in City Hall.
I totally agree with you. I know when we had corporations come in down here, and where the state of Texas was giving them some of the worst outlaws being kicked out of Taiwan to come here, we give them $250 million in tax abatement. Our poor little school district gives them $100 million, and then every politician in our county and state officials were getting contracts with the corporations. I mean, it was like building contracts and security contracts, and it's like, what is going on when all of this coziness is going on and nobody is watching out for the people?
Well, you participated in one thing that really intrigued me. We all know what this criminal organization that's called a British Petroleum, BP.
Oh, yeah.
we all know what they did to the Gulf of Mexico, and I wrote so much about it, Diane. I think almost enough to fill a book, so many articles. I must have written 15 to 20 articles about BP, talking about the environmental destruction, the human destruction, and again, the criminality with the Obama administration literally letting them get away with destroying the Gulf of Mexico and the lives of, dare I say, millions of people along the Gulf Coast from Texas to Florida, and this outrage is still going on, and then cheating people, not giving them proper redress, and you showed up at their annual meeting in London with covered with fake oil. You want to talk about that for a minute?
Well, it just seems I just have this miraculous ability to run into CEOs and executives of these corporations. And so actually I was going to go to BP's general meeting in London, and all the executives were going to be there. I had a proxy. There was actually 4 Gulf of Mexico fishermen that went, and lo and behold, their security, BP security, had my picture on their cell phones, and they were looking for me. And they even threw out a woman even before she got in, because she kind of had black curly hair and wore red earrings. They pitched her out because she looked like me. And I guarantee you, I walked right up to the door, and I mean, I didn't even get into it, and the security jumped right in front of me and said, "Nope, you're not going in there." And the thing was, it was legal. All I was going to do is speak my mind, and they brought in all the security. They brought in the cops, and it ended up for a pretty good free for all, and I ended up in the London jail, not far from the London Tower, actually.
My goodness gracious. That was one of the 50 times, right, Diane?
Yeah.
Even,
London jail is pretty interesting.
Even Scotland Yard nailed you.
Yeah, they did. And, you know, it was so funny. I was in the London jail, and you lay down on those hard benches, and you look up at the ceiling, and they write messages to you on the ceiling. And I remember one, it said, "Aren't you tired of being tired of running from the law? Turn in yourself." I still remember that one. I thought that was pretty wild, having messages on the ceiling.
Talk about running from the law.
Britain
has what they call a special relationship with America. Well, we need to define what special is. It's a special crime relation with America.
They
both partner in imperial wars, slaughtering, dare I say, millions of people over the years that they've done it together. I mean, you talk about a crime. They turn their criminal corporations loose to destroy the lives of people, to destroy the environment, and U.S. President Obama shows up in London, and he's treated like visiting royalty. I mean, why didn't Scotland Yard arrest him?
Oh, yeah. Well, why didn't the FBI arrest another one who's a CEO of just Union Carbide? I mean, he had a warrant for his arrest.
Oh, absolutely.
The FBI should have been, but absolutely, they have no idea where these people are, and they don't. What you said earlier about nobody watching the store, nobody taking care of business, agencies, federal, state government, the politicians, forget it. It's going to come from the people, or it's not going to come at all.
Well, that's exactly right. When you mentioned Union Carbide, I think the name doesn't exist anymore. I forget who bought them.
No, it's Dow.
Dow bought them. Well, you're talking about what they did in India at Bhopal.
Well, it was 1984, and it was a time when they were, you know, I think they called it the greening of India, and they were going to make it this agricultural bonanza. And so Union Carbide started up experimental pesticide plant, and it wasn't making money, so they started, the first thing they do when they don't make a profit, they start jerking away all the expenses. So they were jerking away refrigeration, safety, alarms, and what ended up happening is the unbelievable. They never conceive all of their little manipulation and their impact, and it's really going to do the damage it could possibly do. And it did. They had this pesticide release, and that first night, probably anywhere 3,000 to 8,000 people died in one night, and I think 13,000 before the second day. This is almost 20 years after the fact, and 30 people still die a month from the impact of that pesticide release.
That really is incredible.
And that one
did a lot of damage fast, Diane. The kind of damage we see done now, like what BP did to the Gulf, what happened in Japan, the Fukushima nuclear plant, at least 3 full core meltdowns of nuclear reactors. The information just kind of comes out grudgingly, and we still don't know the worst of it, I'm convinced. But that as bad as BP was in the Gulf, what happened in Japan, and I'm very suspicious about just what's going on there. Of course, there was an earthquake and there was a tsunami, but BP was very, very lax on safety. I mean, this is a BP tradition, and this company in Japan, the Tokyo Electric Company, TEPCO, same thing, a history of not giving a damn about safety. So in any one of their plants, you don't need a tsunami, you don't need an earthquake. In any one of their plants, anything can happen, and you could have a very disastrous situation. And we're talking about major crimes. I mean, you destroy the whole Gulf of Mexico, and I say categorically nothing in there is safe to eat. And I'm not certain if it'll ever be safe to eat. I'm too old. In my lifetime, I don't think it will be. And in Japan, the world's expert on radiation measurements has said that one-third of the country, the northern third of the country, is uninhabitable and should be evacuated.
That is unreal.
I mean, that's absolutely incredible. Of course, it's not being done. It won't be done. And millions of people may die from this, but it could take 20 years, 30 years. So who's going to know?
Well, you know, and the thing that is I have a injured workers group. It's called Texas Injured Workers, and I probably got the only injured workers group that's a part of the atomic chemical and oil industry on the whole Gulf of Mexico. And so I talked to all the workers that have been injured in the plant, the whistleblowers, and they're always giving me information. They give me documentation. They give me confidential documents that are not supposed to see the light of day. And I remember these workers come to me, and they say that management tells them, do not report a release, do not report a worker injury, do not report a safety violation, because if you do, you're going to lose your bonus or we're going to fire you. And so when you got that kind of response that's really going on, I don't care what those corporations tell the public or what their PR says or what their little slick newsletter says, when it gets down to the trenches inside the plant, that's what management tells these guys. And so no wonder this stuff happens. I was not surprised at all.
Oh, absolutely right, Diane. I want to talk a little bit about your book. And you're not the typical person that decides you want to write a book. Well, neither am I, as a matter of fact.
I'm not your typical. I remember when I wrote my first book, I had a reviewer, and she called me. I think she was from Chicago. I don't know where she was from. And she called me, and she says, now, Diane, I got to ask you this first question. It's like, did a ghostwriter write your book? People have a hard time believing a kind of self-taught person, especially, you know, I've only been through high school, can write a book. And they were real surprised. They were real surprised.
Well, Diana, I must add, I think some of the very best books around are ones written by people like you, and you're talking about the things you were personally involved with.
That's right.
And who can tell that better than the person like you, who is involved in so much of this important, these important kind of events, and you just spell it out. And to me, the one lesson I remember in the only writing course I ever, actually, it was a management course I took when I went to work, but uh-huh. the only one I ever took in college, freshman composition, and the lesson that was taught by a marvelous instructor was the function of language is to communicate, and he didn't give a damn about grammar or punctuation. Uh-huh. Or splitting infinitives. Or,
oh, I don't either.
He didn't care about any of that stuff. He only wanted communication clearly. And his frequent mantra was always, say what you mean. Say what you mean. Tell the story. Say what you mean so everybody understands it. And if you did that, you got along splendidly in his class. Well, I mean, he taught me how to write properly. And you got to say it, and you got to say it right. And anybody can read it, and they can understand it. And someone like you could do it a lot better. I've read some very erudite things that you have to concentrate on to understand, and then sometimes you're not sure if you really did. But they can read your book, Diane, and they know exactly the story that you want to tell.
Oh, I do. Matter of fact, anytime I say anything that I think is a that's going to require a dictionary to look it up, is I go for the simple word so they don't have to look it up in the dictionary. I go for real simple.
Well, you produced this marvelous book, and again, I'm talking to Diane Wilson, and her book is called Diary of an Eco Outlaw. I love that title and the subtitle, An Unreasonable Woman Breaks the Law for Mother Earth. Oh, that is inspired. That really is inspired.
Well, thank you.
And your picture is on the cover. I guess those are shrimp boats in the background.
Yeah, all those shrimp boats in the back, yep.
Is one of them yours?
No, one of my actions was to take my shrimp boat and sink it. So,
oh my goodness!
I do not have I lost my CB. I don't have the CB.
Oh,
and the CB,
my goodness,
it's
gracious!
It's kind of like, you know, it's really a part of you. You know, you're a captain so long on a piece of wood out there in the ocean, and you get real attached to it. But no, I put that one. I did an action with that boat.
Oh, well, I grew up near the Atlantic Ocean, but I never was a seagoing type, except, you know, as a kid going to the beach when my parents took me. But I never spent much of any time on boats and fishing and all of that kind of thing. I grew up in Boston, and
you got an accent, bad.
It wasn't exactly as I guess in the old days it was a seagoing town, and maybe for fishermen today it is. But,
well, actually I've been to Boston at a big fisherman, a big national fisherman expo right there in Boston. Right?
Oh, my goodness gracious. Well, I left Boston when I finished college, and I've only been back a few times. My folks moved down to Florida. I didn't have much of a reason to go back to Boston, and it's been quite a number of years since I went there. And the neighborhood that I grew up with, oh, the last time I was there was about 15 years ago, and it wasn't the same neighborhood. I mean, after all these years, it was all rebuilt, and it just didn't look like the place I grew up in, which was very sad because I had very fine memories of a kid growing up. But anyway, I mean, you cover a lot of ground in this book, including, I mean, not just your personal experiences, but I guess you didn't have any direct experience with the Bhopal incident.
Well, I didn't until about 10 years after the effect, you know, when the Union Carbide plant here in Seadrift blew up. And when that plant blew up, it had just been named the safest plant in Texas, matter of fact. It had gotten an award, and I guess say it was in the newspaper, and they stuck it on the walls, and that thing blew sky high. And about two or three days later, I got this man in my front yard, and I thought he was a Union Carbide executive, but he was Union Carbide's worst nightmare. And he happened to be a activist who had been, actually was a professor who had been watching Union Carbide for a long time, and he invited me to India, to Bhopal. And that's when I went and I found out the story behind Bhopal. And actually, most people don't realize that the toxic release inventory that we have in the United States, the TRI data where industry has to report their emissions every year, is because of Bhopal. That was the one thing, believe it or not, Congress actually did, and they're trying to get rid of it right now, but they actually passed a law called the Community Right to Know that they did not want citizens to live next to a big industry and possibly the next day woke up where everybody in your community is dead. They want to know what is in that industry, what's coming out their smokestacks and discharge and landfills and all of that, and that's where the United States, we have that environmental law, the toxic release inventory from Bhopal, India.
I think the only problem, Diane, is we have some of these laws, but oftentimes we get deregulation that neutralizes them.
Oh, yes.
Even with the laws on the books, the enforcement, shall I say, is extremely lax.
The enforcement is non-existent, I guarantee you. Totally believe that one. Non-existent.
Yeah. I mean, especially, the big corporate interests, and certainly the big oil and big chemical, these interests are very powerful. The bankers are really at the head of the queue, the defense contractors, but all the big ones. We have an oligopolistic or monopolistic system, and they all interrelate with each other, working against the common good, and government is their handmaiden. They literally
Absolutely.
Pick the people who govern us. They fund their elections. They are assured that the people they want get the top positions of power, and those people repay their debt by serving these companies against us, and they're causing terrible harm. I'll give you a new cause to get involved in, Diane, if you haven't done much of anything. Much of anything already.
Which one is it?
And go after the companies involved in nuclear power.
Oh my goodness! Yeah, we've got one trying to get in down here in Texas. Yep. Well, a number of them.
I don't know how many nuclear reactors there are in Texas, but I'm surrounded by them in Chicago.
Oh wow! Yeah.
I mean, Chicago potentially is a very dangerous place because if one of those plants goes down and Chicago was downwind, then in theory, Chicago would have to be evacuated forever. It hasn't happened, but these plants have a bad history, bad maintenance history, and they cut costs and they cut corners and they play nuclear roulette with public safety. And it's one thing to do it in some ways, but nuclear plants are really unforgiving. That's a big issue for me, especially after Fukushima. I remember Three Mile Island, and I remember Chernobyl.
Yeah.
But now we have this monstrous event that's ongoing now, and that really brought it to the forefront for me, which made me write an awful lot about what is happening in Japan. And I'll probably write more about it because it's an ongoing story that will not go away for months, maybe years.
Yeah, and especially when it seems that our elected officials, they are real keen on now putting nuclear plants wherever they want. And they're trying to bring a lot more down here in Texas. Apparently we're just a haven for anything, any kind of roach, low critter. We will do it down here.
Oh, absolutely. I guess Texas is very much deregulated.
Bush.
You had to live under George Bush for a while.
That's right. Now we got Mr. Perry, who
yes.
is nearly, I believe, is bad.
I believe it.
They're running neck and neck.
Diane, we're almost out of time. I want to, any final thoughts that we haven't covered that you want to get in?
No, you did a pretty darn good job, and I totally agree with you that it's going to take the people on the ground, the grassroots, making the changes we need in this government. Do not wait on a politician. Do not wait on legislation. It's just make the change ourselves.
Well, that's exactly what has to be done, and unfortunately things are not getting better. They're getting worse. And we also live in economic hard times, Diane, where instead of government helping people living under great duress, terrible situation for so many people. Growing numbers, not quite certain where the next meal is coming from.
Yeah.
It hasn't reached critical mass on that, but the level of food insecurity in the country is really dire, and it gets worse daily. And instead of government working to alleviate these problems, they are simply, for the most part, swept under the rug to take care, again, of the big corporate interests, giving away our money to bankers and the rest of them. And I expect some serious economic disruptions to be very evident and unable to be hidden. And then, I mean, the public duress they don't care about, but when it affects the corporate interests because the economy is moving sharply in the wrong direction, that's when things begin to happen. But again, people aren't helped, and the only way people can get the help they need is we have to raise the same kind of ruckus that you do, Diane, and get out there very actively. The people in Wisconsin were marvelous for week after week.
They were. That was a wonderful thing to see, I guarantee you.
We need to see that. We need to see it happen, and we need to see it sustained all over the country, because people are harmed everywhere. And right now it's going on in so many countries, not so much here, but I think it's heading here. And it could be, I hope, it could be something that will not ebb. It will grow and reach critical mass around the world where it needs to reach this mass.
Yes.
And literally force change on politicians that otherwise never would have done it. But it is happening. There are literally heroic actions going on as we speak, Diane. And I want them to inspire people here. I write about this stuff hoping that I'll inspire more people to get involved. And we desperately need to do it here. Oh, my goodness, Diane, we're out of time. This was a marvelous, marvelous session with you. I admire you so much and your book.
Thank you very much. I enjoyed writing it.
Oh, again, Diane, it is called Diane Wilson, Diary of an Eco-Outlaw, An Unreasonable Woman Breaks the Law for Mother Earth. What better way, what better reason to break the law for, as well as doing it for human rights and civil liberties and democratic values and all the good things that our leaders mouth off about but simply don't give a damn about. It's up
That's
to
right.
us to give a damn about them.
Absolutely.
Diane, my great thanks to you.
Well, thank you very much for having me, and I'll say see you in the streets then.
Absolutely, okay. Absolutely. And I'll just remind my listeners that we're on weekends, different time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time, Saturday and Sunday. Do join us then.